Good afternoon. I'd like to go ahead and call the Health and Social Service Committee to order. The time is 1:32 p.m., 11th of April, 2016. With me today is Senator Geisel, Senator Stoltz, Senator Ellis, myself. We have quorum. We've got one item of business to do. On the agenda is the first hearing for House Bill 27. And first up, and only up, is House Bill 27, an act relating to duties of the Department of Health and Social Services relating to hearings on the plans of permanent placement of a child in need of aid, relating to school placement and transportation for children of foster care, relating to foster care transition programs, relating to emergency and temporary placement of a child in need of aid, relating to transitional investment arrangements for children, foster care, and amending Rule 17.2, Alaska Child in Need of Aid Rules and Procedures. We have with us today the bill sponsor. If he could come forward, please. Introduce him for the record, or introduce himself for the record. I see he has some assistants in the room also. If you could take us through the bill after you introduce yourself, please, and tell us what we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Les Guerra, House District 20, and my aide, Molly Carver. Thank you for hearing the bill. I have to admit it caused me a little concern when it was on the House floor on April Fool's Day, but that didn't turn out to be a big problem. Mr. Chair, would you like to do sort of a sectional, or would you rather that I just explain the bill sort of colloquially?
If you'd like, Rep. Guerra, just maybe give us a real high-level view of what the bill's going to entail and then drop us through the bill would probably be
sure.
Best.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The goal of the bill, obviously, is to give foster youth a much better chance to succeed without damage, without being bounced between the 10, 20, 30, and sometimes 40 homes that we know happen right now. That becomes neglect in itself. That just becomes systemic neglect. I do know that more youth are succeeding anecdotally than have in the past. This legislature has come together in many ways, in good ways, and we've done some good things together, but still we're at a point where 24% of foster youth end up in jail at some point. Roughly 35% end up either couch surfing or homeless at some point coming out of care. And the goal of the bill, the two main goals of the bill are to get youth out of the foster care system and into a permanent loving home more quickly. In this state, we have more youth per capita than any other state except for one, more youth waiting for an adoptive home. They're ready to live in a permanent home, but only one other state on a per capita basis has more youth than we do who are ready, willing, able to get into a permanent home, but just sitting and languishing in the foster care system, and that's a problem. There's support letters in the packet from the Alaska Children's Trust Facing Foster Care in Alaska, and a bipartisan national group, First Focus Campaign for Children. And if I could just read really briefly from what the Alaska Children's Trust says, it sort of summarizes the hopeful impact of the bill, and that's to reduce the impact of trauma by taking steps to get youth out of foster care into loving homes, reduce new incidences of adverse childhood experiences, and build resilience among Alaska's children. So on getting youth into a permanent home, the bill does a few things. There are obviously stresses over the Office of Children's Services. They make mistakes, and without even saying bad things, you have very young caseworkers. They come out of college, they get their training, and very shortly they leave, and then you have another new caseworker in their place. I think roughly half of their caseworkers don't even last a year. And they often are not able to learn the job as well as a more seasoned worker. And so we're going to have a double check to make sure the most important things in the foster care system are done right. One is getting the child out of foster care into a loving home. And so at the hearings that already exist, we will have the court add to the questions that they will already ask, what are you doing to get the child into a permanent home? The easiest thing is to do a family search to make sure you've searched for grandparents, aunts, uncles. But we know that sometimes some of the young social workers don't even, or caseworkers don't even know that that's one of their jobs. We had one caseworker admit to one of the child advocates recently that they didn't even know that was part of their job. that is part of their job. And so if that's what happens at the court hearing, the judge says, what have you done to get a child into a permanent home? Have you seen if there's an available family member? And the answer is, I didn't know that was part of my job. They get sent out to do their job. That should be happening in the system. Everything in this bill is consistent with what should be happening in the system as a best practice, but in many cases it's not happening. So that's part of the bill. And we have another law that many other states have adopted. It's also a best practice. I don't know if you've heard of the Casey Family Foundation, but that was founded by the person who founded UPS, and he took foster care on as his big issue, and he started two foundations. They pushed to allow foster youth, if they need to be able to stay in foster care up till age 21. There's no requirement that they stay that long, but if they need it, if they're not able to get out on their own before 21, we let them stay there. That's already the law in Alaska and 22 other states. But sometimes a social worker who does not know the child will show up at the regular sort of status hearing and say, this child's ready to go, and they don't know the child. So all they have to do there is what's already the law for children under 18. They have to show the judge that it's in the best interest of the child to send them out of foster care, that they're willing and that they're able to stand on their own, that they don't need to be in foster care anymore. It may be the case they don't need to be, and that's fine. But we know of many cases where children have been sort of exited from the foster care system when they're not ready. They end up homeless. They end up costing us more money, but they end up losing their own personal dignity at the same time. So that's another important part of the bill. For most youth, why age 21 can be important to a foster child is, for most youth, they have a family member to call. Even if they leave home at 18 and they need help, they need advice, they need guidance on education or finding a job, they have a family member to call. These youth don't have anybody to call. And so sometimes it is important to let them stay till they get stable. Sometimes maybe they've started a vocational education and they need a place to live and a foster family to come home to at nighttime. And if they were ready to go to vocational voc ed or maybe the university, if you've got no place to live, you're not going to do very well, right? So that's the point there. Just make sure they're not exited from the foster care system unless it's in their best interest. So at the existing hearings, we let the court ask that if you're going to exit a child. There's a law basically right now that says within the first 30 days that you take a child away from a family, from their family, you have to start doing a family search. And so what that does is the child ends up in an emergency foster home. They get bounced maybe to another emergency foster home. It's an extra bounce, at least one extra bounce. And so we say, if it's feasible, if you're able, please start doing the family search in advance of putting them in the emergency placement. Maybe you'll put them straight into the grandparent that will take care of that child for the rest of their adulthood. We're trying to avoid one extra bounce. And so it says if it's feasible, do a family search before that first emergency 30-day placement. And then we also, like I said before, we also say each time a child switches homes, is bounced from one home to another home to another home, and they go to court for that, that at each of those points, just make sure that your family search is thorough so that you know who the family members are out there. Right now, the law really is, the federal law is, you're just supposed to check in the first 30 days. That's when the natural parent is the angriest, probably, most unlikely to tell you about who the natural family members are. And so if you've got one of these youth who's bounced between 5, 10, 11, 20, 30, 40 foster homes, and we know they're youth like that, at the placement change, ask and just make sure you know what the family search is if there's a grandparent. We know youth. We know two young men who were in the foster care system their whole lives. It wasn't until they were 16 that yet another social worker said, hey, wait a second, has anybody done a family search? And they found a grandparent and an aunt and an uncle at age 16. It should have been found much earlier than that. And those kinds of cases happen, and we don't want those things to happen. There's another no-cost, I mean, the bill is it's a no-cost bill. We tried to do everything we could without spending a ton of money. The bill also adds to the department's duties, which would either be the director or anybody that works at the department. Sometimes they're in front of 200 people. They're in front of audiences that are receptive to helping. And we want them to pitch. If we have a shortage of foster parents or adoptive parents, we'd like them to pitch at that public gathering. We have a shortage. If anybody's out there, here's a sheet. And it's you know, I did that all of December and January. I went to every Chamber of Commerce and Rotary meeting I could. I've done that in the past. I'd like the department to know that they can do that too. So that's a no-cost thing. If you're in front of a big group of people, please just mention it. We do have a shortage of foster parents and adoptive parents right now. Another thing the department tries to do right now, but we want to make sure they do, and it's now federal law under a law that passed earlier this year or late last year. School stability is important for these youth. If a youth bounces between 5, 10, 15 foster homes and they're bounced between a school every single time, they fall 3-4 months behind, up to 6 months behind every time they change, especially as they're older. If you're in one portion of your algebra class and then you get sent to another school and they're in a whole different portion and you have all this dislocation in your life, you're not going to do very well. And so the Casey Family Foundation, their studies show you fall about 4 months behind when that happens. This just says if it's in the child's best interest, if it's within the same municipality, try and allow that child to stay there for the rest of the school term or at least part of the school term. It's already a national standard. It's now federal law, though the federal sanction isn't to make sure that it happens. They just take away your federal money if you don't do it. We put it in here so a magistrate can say, did you try and do that? And if it's not feasible, it's not feasible. And certainly it's not feasible between municipalities. You're not going to send a youth who just moved to Wasilla from Anchorage back to Anchorage for school. But within the same municipality, sometimes it's feasible. There's a provision in the bill the department asked for. They have a conundrum. They want to help youth succeed, and sometimes the youth who is in foster care will go to a dorm and live in the dorm, and you won't pay the foster family their daily rate while that's happening, but they can't legally place the child in a dorm because that's not a licensed foster home. So we add a provision that lets the department say that's okay. You can stay in foster care just so you have a place to go at Christmas or during the summer, a family to rely on. They won't get the daily payment when you're not living with them, but OCS will be able to let the child go for vocational training or job training or college and live in a dorm or another place, so they could do that. And I think the only other part of the bill is that there's something called the Independent Living Program. Every state has one. This is the part of the foster care system where you try and transition youth to success. And so you try and get them job training, or maybe it's college, or maybe it's just a place to live and the ability to stand up on their 2 feet. There are funds, they're called employment training vouchers, that help youth with vocational training, or maybe it's college, or maybe it's something else. Maybe it's a place for the child to live for the first 3 months as they sort of build up money for to live on their own. And all we ask is for a report from the department to let us know whether or not they have the funds to do that. If they don't, and we don't, and we decide there's nothing we can do about it, we can't do anything about it, but at least we should know. And there's very little information that we get on how that part of the department is running. So it would just be a one-page report probably that says, this is the number of youth, this is what we have available. We weren't able to get job training for 10 kids. You should know that, and it's up to us whether or not we want to do anything about that. That's pretty much the bill, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. But we can't have the second largest number of kids per capita waiting to be placed in an adoptive home. I think that number sticks out as bad as the homelessness and incarceration rates for these youth.
So let's go through it in sections, and then do you have a question, Senator Giesel?
Yes. Representative Guerra, who applies for the child's PFD, and who owns that?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel. It's a good question, and I think the department will be able to answer that better. My understanding is that that's held for the child until they're at the age of majority, and I believe Senator Costello has edited another bill with different language on that point.
We're going to have the department come up.
But OCS does the application for the children
you.
Right now.
All right, I'll check with them. Thanks.
Well, they'll be up here in a minute. We can have them answer the question. So shall we, any other questions before we go through the sections? All right, good. Take us through the sections. Section one, what does it say?
Section one is just the title of the bill, the Child Protection and Opportunity Act. Section 2 is just that sort of part that tells the department if there's a shortage of foster and adoptive parents to try and pitch that to the public. It adds it to their general duties as a department. Section 3 and 4 are the parts that that make sure that...
We can stop there if we can go like on Section 2. Could you tell us it's an amended section? Tell us what was amended, please.
Section 2 was not amended, Mr. Chair. There was one section that was amended. Is that what you mean? If it was amended, there was an amendment in the House? Or? Oh, where I'm amending the current law. I see.
Yeah, page 4, line 6.
Yeah, page 4, line 6. So in the general duties of the department, we add that they should actively seek to recruit quality foster parents and adoptive parents when a shortage occurs. And that's what I've meant when they're in front of a big group. They can hand out a flyer and make a pitch for folks who would like to be an adoptive or foster parent, because we do have a shortage. Section 3, on page 5, there are already these reports that OCS has to file with the court. And one thing that should be added to the report is what you're doing to make reasonable efforts to seek a permanent home for a child. That should be a very short entry as long as the caseworker has done their job. And that's already supposed to be done over at OCS. Section 4 is the same issue. If during the status hearings that already happen, the court may ask, are you engaging in reasonable efforts to find the child a permanent home? And the main question will be, have you done the family search? Have you looked for a good home? Because this kid may have been in 10, 15, 20 placements by now. And it's to stop that damage. So the court gets to ask that question, and if the social worker, as in the one case that we know of, says, I didn't know I was supposed to do a family search, the judge will say, go do a family search. So, and the department would want that to happen because they're supposed to be doing that now. Section 5 on page 7 is the provision I mentioned when a child is bounced from one home to another. At each new placement, the department should make sure that their family search is complete so that they know that there might be a grandparent or aunt or uncle that's willing to take the child. It might be in the child's best interest. So right now, the federal law says you only do that search in the first 30 days. But that's when the parents are possibly the most hostile and least likely to tell you who the grandparents and uncles and aunts are. Section 6 is also a practice within the department, an intended practice within the department, and is now become federal law, which is if it's in the child's best interest, you try and maintain school stability for the remainder of the school term if a child is moved from one home to another home within a municipality. And the department holds these things called team decision meetings. They're very effective. I know members of who look into OCS on both sides of the aisle have been impressed with the team decision meetings. You bring in all the people who are interested in the child's life together, and when those things happen, they can add the question, is bouncing a kid between one school and another school in the kid's best interest? You get more input from that group, too, as you're making that decision, whether it's in the best interest to try and maintain school stability for the child, or really, if you're in kindergarten, and you're not really on a strict curriculum, it's probably more likely to be okay to move the child to a new school. So they're supposed to look at all of those factors. Section 7 is a new section, and that's the one where I mentioned the usual practice is a child is taken away from their home and they're put straight into a strange emergency foster care placement. Strange family, some of they don't know. There are families that sign up to do emergency foster care. It's just one extra placement. What we say is if it's feasible and you're able to see if there's a family member first, please try and do that so that you avoid one more bounce and maybe you'll find the ideal family member right then to take care of the child and adopt the child. And it's an effort to minimize the damage of all these changed placements. Section 8. This is the issue I mentioned that the department asked to try and fix a problem they have, which is child's in foster care. They're ready to go to the University of Alaska or over to get job training. They need a place to live, and the department can't legally place them there because that's not a licensed placement. And this says they can now come up with rules to figure that problem out. Section 10. Right now, when you go to court to say it's time to release the child from foster care, the court only asks for youth up to 18 whether it's in their best interest to be sent out on their own. But after 18, there's no requirement. And so we say even after 18, if you're going to let the youth out, just make sure it's in their best interest. So it just extends the existing law. That's sort of a glitch in the law right now. And that it should always, that's always the standard in OCS cases. Is it in the child's best interest? Section 11 is, it addresses sort of a pet peeve of mine. It may not change the world. Right now, OCS for older youth, if you look at page 9, line 5, they're only supposed to offer assistance in obtaining basic education, and that term just does not seem right. This is, you know, we're beyond the sort of Charles Dickens days of orphanages, and so we just say that and these words came up in a different committee, we just say assistance in obtaining educational and vocational training. If you look at line 3, the law says the program may provide. So whichever is in their best interest, if the child is on an educational track or a vocational track, whichever. But we don't like the term basic education. Section 12 is that report we told you about. If the child in transition to adulthood part of the program, if they're not able to provide funds to help somebody with basic vocational training or something to get the youth ready to succeed on their own, they just will add to their report to us annually whether the funding there is adequate, not adequate, and it's really just, it's our determination at that point whether or not we have the ability to do anything about that. Section 13, it's arguable that there are court rule amendments in this bill. I don't really think there are, but Section 13 says just in case anything is interpreted as a court rule amendment, it says there's a court rule amendment in the bill.
We have an initial question for the bill sponsor before we bring the department up. Seeing none, we will have the department come participate a little bit. If you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, and then help us with the PFD question first, if you would, and then speak to whatever sections or areas of the bill you'd like the committee to be informed on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tracy Sparks Campbell, and I am the Deputy Director for the Office of Children's Services. And to start with the PFD question, as you have requested, currently the Office of Children's Services applies for the permanent fund dividends on behalf of the children. We hold those PFDs in a trust, which is an interest-bearing trust, and those PFDs are not released until the child is either released back into the custody of their parents, and they would go to the custody, or they would be released to the parent directly, and we also, or if the youth ages out of care, they would be sent, they would be given to the youth.
Okay. Does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We have, maybe we'll just let you talk about this bill a little bit, help the committee understand what we have and your comfort levels, and then as you know, there's a CS coming, so
certainly
we'll probably have you speak to that at some point also.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to be here today to testify in support of HB 27. This is a bill that we've worked very closely with the bill sponsor on over the last year or so. And the advantages to this bill, at least from the department's perspective, is it really helps to align our current best practice standards that are national standards with the statute itself. I think that the bill sponsor has presented some very good testimony so far about how this bill will better improve the permanency outcomes for our youth, and also looking at some other provisions of the bill that I'd like to go into in more detail. So to start with, the permanency planning hearings are a required hearing that we do in our court systems at the 12-month mark of every case. And as the bill sponsor, Representative Guerra, pointed out, that those reports that we present to the court do not necessarily outline who the permanent placement is or when that permanent placement would actually begin. All we are doing is basically saying the permanent placement of the child is either to return to the parent or to go into an adoptive or a guardianship home. So what this bill has allowed is for some reasonable effort standards to be added to that permanency hearing to ensure that there is a permanency placement in place, and in addition to that, that if we've not made those reasonable efforts, that the court can then say to OCS, you need to go and do that and get a permanent placement as soon as possible. So we see this as a very good provision. Some of the other areas I'd like to address specifically, Representative Guerra pointed out the placement change concerns, that every time we have to move a child from one placement to another, there's always a need for us to go back and evaluate relatives. That is a part of our practice now, but it isn't consistent. And certainly by having it in statute, it becomes another double check that we can take a look at every time we have to make a placement change. I would say for the record that placement changes are something that we are loath to do, but sometimes we have to do them, and this is just ensuring that relatives are given that first priority when we do look at those placement changes.
Stop there. We have a question from Senator Diesel.
Could I just ask about the family placement? So there's a pretty thorough vetting process for a foster family. Does that apply to the family members as well? How thorough is that?
Yes, and through the chair, Senator Giesel, when we're dealing with relatives, the relatives have two choices. One choice is that they could choose to take the child as an unlicensed relative care placement, or they could choose to become licensed for foster care. So obviously if they become licensed, then they would meet the same standards as our other foster parents do. In the case of unlicensed relatives, they are required to go through a basic safety review. We go in and check their home to make sure that basic safety factors such as fire extinguishers and smoke detectors and those types of things are there. We also put them through a fingerprint background check to ensure that there's no criminal background. So it just depending on what the relative is interested in, that can determine what level of safety there is there, and safety review is there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and continue, please.
Okay. Well, as I was saying, back to the placement change, when we're looking at moving a child from one placement to another, another factor that enters into play is their school placement. And as Representative Guerra pointed out, there is now new federal legislation that requires us to continue to keep children in the school that they started in at the beginning of the school year. And this just makes sense from an educational stability point of view. It's one of the well-being outcomes that we are measured on by the federal government, so it is something that we take very seriously. What this bill does is really, again, elevate that within our statute to make sure that we are, that everybody understands this is something that we do need to look at, and we do, as much as possible, need to keep children in their home schools. One of the other factors is often we may have a child that lives on one side of town and is moved, their school may be on another side of town, and there may be transportation issues. Both at the federal level and at the state level, we have funds available to provide that transportation, so we did not see that as an impediment. And from a budgetary point of view, this is something we've already built into our budget. I think that, sure.
We have another question from Senator Diesel.
Can I just ask about those transportation funds? Are those federally provided or those state funds?
In part, both, Senator Giesel, through the chair. We have federal funds through the school district that the school district is required to provide, and then if those are not available for whatever reason, then we have state funds to fall back on.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I also would like to add that Representative Guerra spoke to the importance of our speaking to youth when they exit our custody, making sure that they are prepared and ready to be on their own when they do leave care. We do have the provision right now that for our youth that are in care up to age 18, that they need to essentially be able to let the social worker know that they're ready, that they agree with the discharge, that they feel prepared, and that has to be reported to the court. So this provision expands that to our youth who have been extended in custody to age 21. Excuse me. and then finally, just the requirement about looking at the recruitment of foster homes and the need for adoptive homes. As Representative Guerra said, there's an awful lot of children that are waiting in care that are looking for permanency. Our numbers have gone up, as everybody knows, in the last couple of years, and part of that is due to the fact that we have kids that are looking for permanency. So this really allows for us to continue to reach out to a multitude of community providers that could help us in that arena. And I would add, finally, just the provision with regards to dormitories. That is something that our youth brought to our attention, that they have a lot of, there are several youth that are ready for college and would like to be in a dormitory placement, but because of the omission, essentially, from the statute, there wasn't a way that we could do that legally. So we're happy to see that here. Representative Guerra pointed out that much of these provisions is just a part of the work that we do, and for that reason, we have not submitted, we've submitted a zero fiscal note on this matter, and we believe very confidently that we can absorb these changes within our existing budget.
Thank you. Any other initial questions for the department? Okay, seeing none, we're going to now go to the public hearing portion. We'll start with the OffNet, if you could, when I call your name, if you could introduce yourself for the record, speak to the bill in front of us, and try to keep your comments to a couple of minutes, I'd appreciate it. We'll start with Amanda Mativier from Anchorage.
Mativier,
okay.
Thanks. For the record, my name's Amanda Mativier, and I'm the Executive Director of Facing Foster Care in Alaska. I'm also a former foster child. I aged out of Alaska's foster care system, and I'm currently a foster parent, and I have two social work degrees from the University of Alaska, Anchorage. I just want to take a moment first to thank the committee for allowing time to hear this bill and for allowing time for public testimony today. I'm testifying on behalf of Facing Foster Care in Alaska. We're a statewide organization of young people in and from the foster care system, and I can tell you that our foster youth throughout the state support every provision of this bill, and many of the provisions of this bill are things that young people in the system have themselves asked for. As of February, we're pushing about 3,000 children and youth in foster care in our state. That's a record high, and as Representative Guerin with the department said, that we have a lot of children who are waiting for permanent families, and this bill would help to move children out of the system and into permanent loving homes. As a foster parent right now, I have a teenager in my home who has been through 47 different foster care placements. She's been in the system for 13 years. And I think that if somebody was asking the question in court a long time ago, what are we doing to find relatives? What are we doing to find a permanent home? She wouldn't have had to suffer through that many placement changes with foster homes and group homes and even school changes. And so for a lot of young people, it would make a big difference by getting them out of the system and into families. I think one of the best things that we can do for foster youth is get them out of the foster care system, because the community can do so much more than the state can do. There's a young lady who I also work with right now who just aged out of the system in December, her 21st birthday, and she had spent 18 years in the OCS system. One of the first things she did when she aged out was went and filed for public assistance. So not only do we do a disservice to our youth when they age out of our system without a loving family, we're putting them into a whole other system of relying on state and federal resources for social services. And I believe that even in my own experience, I'm 31 now, and my sister and I got a permanent loving family, and one of the best things that could have happened to us was a support system outside of OCS and getting out of the system, and a family who could, push us and help us with things as we became adults, with things like getting a driver's license, the expectation that we would get jobs and go on to college. And so this bill would ensure that we as a state continue to make efforts to get youth out of the system and into permanent families through adoption, guardianship, reunification, placement with relatives. We really believe that the permanency provisions of this bill are the most important. And I think I've said this before maybe in testimony, but I don't think you can really legislate love. But I think we can certainly ask that the department continue to show efforts to find permanent families for youth, because everyone benefits. Children get out of the system. They have a family that loves them, that will care for them, that makes sure that they move on into society as productive, as functioning adults who don't continue that cycle. But there's also a huge cost savings to the state, and the burden comes off the system of having all these children in foster care.
Amanda, could I get you to finish up, please?
Yep. The other things we think are important are the transitional living option in college dorms. For youth transitioning out of foster care, it's not only a transition, it's more of an event. Like, you're in foster care one day and you're in your own apartment the next, or maybe you're in a homeless shelter or dorm housing, and so this just eases that transition and gives you a real opportunity to first move into dorm housing or transitional living and then settle in and be released from custody. So again, I appreciate you taking time for public testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Next up, Trevor Storrs.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Trevor Storrs, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Children's Trust. And thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to testify on House Bill 27. We are in support of this bill as well. The Children's Trust is a statewide lead organization focused on the prevention of child abuse and neglect. And we really are focusing on reducing trauma and building resiliency both in the child, the family, and within the community. What this House Bill 27 really does is starts looking at and working the state towards understanding and reducing the impact of trauma that takes place when a youth is placed into foster care, and the power of, as Amanda was talking about, of a loving home. And most importantly, reducing the number of adverse experiences that a child experiences then gives them the opportunity to build truly the resilience they need to be able to bounce back from the traumas they have experienced and most definitely are going to be faced as an adult working through their own life. What this new bill does is also helps connect children with their relatives by encouraging the OCS to prioritize family placement. The power of family, that sense of connection, is exceedingly undermeasured. By having a sense of belonging both within a family and even more so within a community connects that individual in such a way that they want to invest in that community versus being a potential burden or a barrier within that community. And again, that is through the building of resilience and lessening trauma. Bill 27 is a move in the right direction. We support this, and I appreciate your time, and I'm open to any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Storrs. Okay. With that, we're going to, that takes care of the off-net. There's no one signed up on the, in the LIOs. We have one person in here. It's hard to read the last name. Andrea, maybe?
Andrea.
You know the routine. You know to come forward when your name's called out anyway. So if you can introduce, you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent.
My name is Jane Andrie, and I live in Douglas, Alaska, and I am the chair of the statewide steering committee for the Alaska Women's Lobby. We are an independent, informally organized group that works to support the health and well-being of women, children, and families. And I don't want to repeat a lot of what was said. This is a bill that we certainly very much support and appreciate Representative Guerra's introduction of it. As I was looking through the materials, one of the things that really struck me was the letter that was written by Tamara Dietrich. I believe she's from Anchorage. She tells her family story of dealing with her, it sounds like her niece, and then they adopted her. The thing that I think is really important for us to stress has already been said, but it's important that we assist all of these children to have as stable and as well-rounded a childhood as is possible. We know that these children are the children that are going to be experiencing higher levels of ACEs, the adverse childhood experience, just as Trevor Storrs testified. And so the more that we can help them build up and be prepared and successfully transition into independent adulthood is going to be of benefit to all of us. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes everybody that signed up. I don't see anybody from the public here that neglected to sign up. If we could have the bill sponsor come forward, please. Before we adopt CS, is there any other questions from the committee? Okay. We have a CS. Virgin Ashke, may we have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee adopt the Senate committee substitute for the committee substitute for the sponsor substitute for House Bill Number 27, Version 29, LS0176/Sierra, as the working document.
Okay, and I'll object for explanation. Representative Guerra, what's going on with the CS?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The representative from North Pole and one of the representatives from the Valley had a concern in the House, and we added an amendment on the House floor, and we've since worked with them to write an amendment that doesn't require extra staff and extra costs, and I appreciate their work with me on that. And so we've basically swapped out what was passed on the House floor with what they've agreed to also in here. So there are these meetings called team decision meetings where you bring in all the stakeholders. They happen in Anchorage in the Valley office and in Fairbanks. And the concern expressed by those representatives was, as we decide this issue of is it in the child's best interest to stay in the same school or not, well, OCS is always supposed to speak to the stakeholders and the new foster parents. Will you be able to handle the transportation maybe of the child from this part of town to the other part of town? They're supposed to evaluate all of that. The new CS says that at that team decision meeting, which will happen whenever there's a placement change or potential placement changes, they should address that issue too. Is that in the child's best interest? That way this will happen within a meeting that already exists. And in those parts of the state where that doesn't happen, OCS, they do say that they consult with stakeholders, we are asking them to do that. And this sort of sends that message too. But in the places where they have the team decision meetings, that's the best place to do that. So, and that also avoids sort of this need to. The House amendment was written in a way where you might have to convene maybe dozens or maybe hundreds of extra meetings. Nobody intended for that to happen, and to do it within the team decision meeting process works better. And like I said, the sponsors of that amendment on the House floor do support this. So.
Yeah. Have any initial questions? If we could have the department come forward, please. We have a CS in front of the committee. I'd like to know the department's thoughts on the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tracy Sparks Campbell, for the record. We have been involved with the language that's involved in the CS, and certainly we're also supportive of that language.
Okay, thank you. I will go ahead and remove my objection to the adoption of the CS. We have version S in front of us. Do we have any further objection to the adoption of the CS? Seeing no other objection, we have version S. Any questions on version S from the committee members? Rep. Guerra, could you come forward, please? I see you've been dragging your trusty aide with you back and forth to the table. We're not going to let her get out of here without talking to the Senate committee and maybe tell us about the bill or your part in the bill or.
For the record, my name is Molly Carver, legislative aide to Representative Guerra. I started working for Representative Guerra last year, and it was very apparent quickly his interest in this issue and his care for foster kids in Alaska. Considering our current fiscal climate, there are obviously some changes we can make to OCS given the money, but these are changes that we are making because we hear from foster kids about these issues. So I guess that's all I have to say. I strongly support the bill.
Okay. I was anticipating Rep. Guerra to make you do the sectional, but we have any other questions for the Senator Stoltz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification, we have the two fiscal notes. Is it the anticipation that the next forthcoming one for the CS will also be a zero?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if I get to say that, but that's been the representation to me from the department, mm-hmm. and that was
we'll see that in the final disposition.
Yes.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions? Okay, seeing no other questions, we'll close public hearing. Nobody else has popped online. We're going to set this bill aside.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to put you too much on the spot, but it's an important legislation, and time is, session is wrapping up. Just wondered if, what the game plan would be or the work schedule then for the legislation.
I'd like to have, because we've got a bill and then a new CS, and it's the first hearing. I hate moving anything on just one hearing. That we have the bill sponsor interact with the committee members, staff, and we check to see if there's any issues within the bill. We come back Wednesday. I'm personally not expecting any after the conversations the staff's had with the bill sponsor and the agency. But, you know, one of the committee members might have a question or concern or something. And then we'll convene a quick meeting on Wednesday and move the bill. We've already been contacted by the next committee of referral, trying to get an idea when we're going to release it. So unless there's a problem with the bill, it'll be Wednesday.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, we will tentatively get together on Wednesday at 1:30. Should be a short meeting, unless there's some surprises. But and with that, we are adjourned.